Hello, this is Nathan Spearing with the Life on Target podcast, and today we're taking a break from our regular programming to bring you some extremely practical parenting advice. The following audio is from a Zoom call between Pastor Toby Sumpter of Christ Church in Moscow, Idaho, and a few men from my church. One of the fathers in our church, who just had his first son, reach out to Pastor Toby for some advice about how to raise sons in the current trials of our day and age. We've kept the original title, Straight Talk for Dads, Raising Sons in a Pornographic Age, but the men who attended the talk also had their wives listen to it, and it sparked many great conversations for us locally at Sandhills Presbyterian Church in Southern Pines, North Carolina. We're simply using the Life on Target podcast infrastructure to make the talk more accessible and convenient for people to listen to. I'd like to encourage you to check out Pastor Toby's blog, located at www.tobyjsumpter.com, spelled S-U-M-P-T-E-R. I've also started and am enjoying his most recent book, No Mere Mortals, from Canon Press, on the subject of marriage. And he is also the co-host of the Cross Politic podcast. I'll link to all these shows, books, and resources in the show notes at spearing.co. Enjoy these words from Pastor Toby.
All right. Well, let me ask God to bless our time. Father, thank you so much for the opportunity we have to meet like this. Thank you for these men who care greatly about your blessing on their families and your blessing particularly on their sons. Father, we want to be faithful fathers, faithful to you, faithful to our sons, faithful to your church and one another. So please, Father, give us your Holy Spirit so that we might hear these words and apply them faithfully and diligently to our lives. Give us wisdom to do that well. We ask for your blessing on our sons in particular and our grandsons, that they would rise up and contend with our enemies in the gates. We ask for this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Well, thanks for the invitation, Ruben, and thanks for setting up this Zoom meeting, Nate, and greetings to all of you. I don't know how many of you I know and how many of you I've met or whatever, but it's good to be here with you all and grateful to talk with you a bit about raising sons. I want to definitely do this with a measure of humility, as my oldest son is 17. He's a senior in high school. My younger son, I've got two. My younger son is 10, and so I'm not, you know, coming to you as you know, someone with several generations of faithful sons already. But by God's grace, I'm very pleased with where my sons are, and I'm grateful to be able to share some of what I've learned. Also, you know, a ton of this is, of course, coming from my own father. I'm a preacher's kid, a pastor's son, and by God's grace, of course, my own father was an enormous influence in my life, and continues to be down to the present. So I jotted down some notes. If you've got something to write with, you might want to jot down some notes as well, or pull up your phone and get a note going. But I've got eight things that I thought of that I was going to walk through with you. So I just kind of, Ruben, you know, threw out the questions that he had, and so I just started jotting down my thoughts, and then I got to eight. So I'm sure there are more. Here we go. Number one, it's never too early to begin preparing sons for manhood. Ruben said earlier, his son is, what do you say, 8 months, I think. You're right on schedule, man. It may be a little late even. Maybe you should have asked 8 months ago. You want to be thinking right now, no matter how young your son is, about them becoming men. And of course, what it looks like is going to change over time as they grow. But you're not wrong to be thinking about it right now. It's never too early to begin preparing sons for manhood. So what do men need? Men need self-control. They need patience. They need courage. They need obedience. They need joy. That's what men need. And so when your boys are young, you already want to be thinking about teaching them those virtues: self-control, patience, courage, obedience, joy. So you want your boys to practice that, and you want to require them to begin learning those things right now. Even as they're, some of this, I would say, maybe as a, very, very small infants, you're just talking to them that way. You pray for them that way. You bless them that way. You ask God's blessing on them to make them courageous. Remember when my firstborn son was, a tiny little infant, I just started, putting my hand on his head and saying, "Lord, make this little boy a mighty man in your kingdom." And I gave him that blessing till it got a little awkward, because he's kind of an old, he's an older teenager now, and it's a little funny, although I still would do it. But that was, a blessing I started giving to him as an infant. And then, even as they start exerting themselves, usually as I'm giving parenting classes with folks, it's like something about, they start moving their bodies, crawling and walking, and something turns on in their brain. And right around then is about the time you're going to start disciplining a little bit, whether it's little flicks or slaps on the hand, and then spanks and stuff. But as they have, control of their body and they begin using their bodies, you have to start teaching them to control it. And so, don't touch, don't throw fits, don't kick when mom's trying to change your diaper. No biting mom, especially when, she's nursing. Those kind of things is like, what are you teaching your little baby? What your little baby boy, you're teaching to be a man. You're teaching him to control his body well. When he fusses and you begin to correct him, when our, little guys were little, we do this with our daughters too, but, as they're getting fussy, before maybe it was right to spank them, we would flick them on their mouth. No fussing. Or if they're throwing a fit, we correct that. And again, with a little baby boy, think to yourself, I know what fussing grows up into. Fussing grows up into a kind of man I don't want my son to be. I want my son to have self-control. I want him to be joyful. I want to have him to have control of his body and control of his emotions. Those are key virtues that men need to have. And then as they begin moving around more, there's more opportunities for learning self-control over emotions and body. When my boys were little, particularly when they fell down, I required them to be tough. So one of the early things is that, they start walking and then they fall, it's totally fine to, pick them up, comfort them real quick, oh man, that was hard. And then right away, I would say, show me tough. In our family, when I said, show me tough, the little boys, they had to growl. That was the proper response. I would say, show me tough. And they had to say, if they could flex, even better. They had to be strong. Show me tough. So they'd fight through the tears. They busted their lip. There's a little bit of blood or whatever. They skinned their knees. Hey, man, I'd comfort them real quick. Oh, man, that hurt. You okay? Show me tough. Now, obviously, if it was an ER moment, I wasn't going to sit there saying, show me tough, within reason. But the normal skins and scrapes and bumps and bruises and so on, there's a moment of comfort and then quick, show me tough. So that's how we would practice. Again, same thing with when they're hungry. Boys, it's physical pain and hunger. There's a lot of the things that get to us. Requiring your young boys to be patient when they're hungry. Requiring your young boys to be joyful when they're grumpy. when they're tempted to be sad or fussy, and caring about that. A little bit of grumpiness in a 1-year-old or 2-year-old, what's that going to grow up into? And the little 2-year-old, it's the temptation to be grumpy is a lot easier to fight in a 2-year-old. And when you say, all right, come on, show me cheerful. Give me a big smile. Okay, go back and play. Be cheerful. What you're practicing is ruling your emotions. You're practicing ruling your body. You're practicing ruling your feelings. If there are things that scare them, same another emotion, fear. Men have to fight their fears. So if there are things that scare them, graciously require them to face those fears. I learned this really poignantly. I've told this story in a few different parenting seminars over the years, but I remember learning this really poignantly before we had kids. I was actually at Ben Merkel's house, and his oldest son was like a toddler, probably like 2 or 3. And we were at dinner, and this little boy was toddling around the dinner table, and I didn't even notice what was going on. And suddenly Ben said, oh, hold on just a second, excuse me, and went out. And I thought, what happened? I mean, there's just toddling around. And nothing obvious. And he went out, and a minute later brought his son back in into the dining room, and his son's kind of, sniffling a little bit and wiping away a few tears. And obviously there'd been a little bit of discipline. And I watched the little boy walk over to the vacuum cleaner and kick it and then walk out of the room. And, his dad said, good job, son. And he walked out. And I kind of, give Ben the, what's going on look. And Ben says, well, he's a little afraid of vacuum cleaner right now. And so every time he sees the vacuum cleaner, he's required to kick it. And it was just this glorious thing where this dad saw, and it's not a huge deal. It's not the end of the world, but like, here's an opportunity, to teach my son to overcome his fear and to face his fear. Go up there and kick it. It's not going to bite you. And that's how he needs to learn that. And so little boys need to learn that. I remember later, somewhat learning from that lesson, doing this with one of my sons, who I found out was afraid of going down one of the sliding poles on the school playground. So after school one day, we went to the school playground, and his favorite food at the time was a McDonald's Happy Meal. And so I got a McDonald's Happy Meal, and I said, here it is for when you go down that sliding pole. And it took a little while. It wasn't right away he did it. I kind of helped him down a couple times, and I said, all right, you do it. And he didn't really want to do it. And we worked on it. And about half hour, 45 minutes later, he was happily eating his Happy Meal in the car with me. And he remembers it. We've talked about it since. And he says, yeah, that was terrifying. And I'm so glad you did that, Dad. But you're, practicing ruling emotions, practicing ruling your body from the earliest ages, and think of that as practicing for manhood, because it is. Every man knows those are your great battles, is fighting, ruling your body, ruling your emotions, ruling your appetites. These are some of the strongest urges men feel. And so we have to be taught, our sons need to be taught to discipline them and rule them well from the earliest ages. And so when you're teaching your son to be tough, when he's fallen down, or teaching him to be cheerful or facing his fears, even from those early years, you're teaching him to be tough when temptation rears its head. That was number one. So like, man, as I'm telling you, this is going to be long. I'm going to go faster. Number two, obedience. Always require immediate, joyful obedience. Always require it. Faithful men are obedient men. We must first learn to be obedient before we can command obedience. We must be men under orders before we can give orders worth following. So obedience is central, is essential to learning to be faithful leaders. But think of teaching obedience to your sons like coaching. Think of teaching obedience to your sons like coaching sports. The best coaches you ever had pushed you hard, beyond what you thought was possible, but you knew that they loved you. You knew that they cared about you. You knew that they were for you the whole time. Now, you know, you might have had some bad coaches. I can remember a coach that was just a really angry man, baseball coach. He got kicked out of like half the games that we played. I don't even know why they allowed him in the league. But, you know, you can have, you know, horrible coaches like that. But the best coaches you ever had, they pushed you really, really hard. And yet you knew they believed in you. They knew that they were that they wanted you to win. And then along with that, think of teaching obedience like coaching in the same way that coaches, the best coaches, teach and practice, teach and practice, teach and practice a lot before the game. So, you know, I didn't grow up playing football. I enjoy watching it, but I don't know the sport on the inside very well. And a bunch of the dads around here have started football leagues. And so my boys, you know, I wasn't able to teach them exactly how to play football. And, you know, a bunch of these boys show up for the very first, you know, league, you know, as third graders or fourth graders. And those coaches have to teach those boys a lot of teaching, a lot of practice, a lot of teaching, a lot of practice before that first game. You can't just go out to the first game and say, you know, go for it, boys. And a lot of dads fail here. A lot of dads fail here because we are provoking our sons to wrath when we do not prepare them to face the things that they're going to face. When we require things of them that we have not prepared them for, and then we are upset or we discipline them as if they could have known, as if they should have known. Now, of course, sometimes they should have, but there's lots of things that we didn't teach them, we didn't prepare them for, and then we wonder why they didn't know how to face it. And that's on us. That's our fault as fathers. No good coach would send his team into a game not having prepared them for the things they're going to face. And if they face something that he didn't prepare them for, that good coach says, that's on me. That's on me, guys. I didn't prepare you for that. That's on me. So don't provoke your children to wrath. That's Ephesians 6:4. By not teaching and preparing your sons for the challenges they're going to face. And here, I mean, particularly I'm thinking about obedience again. Start with just obedience. Practice obedience. Again, I'm thinking about when kids are young to start here. When my children were young, I think I got this from Matt Whitling, who's the superintendent at Logos School. He gave me the idea of playing obedience games with my kids. And so frequently our family devotions after dinner consisted of us playing the obedience game, which meant that I had a big bowl of candy. And then I would just give the kids random commands. And I would say something like, go get a pillow from your room. And, you know, I'd say, you know, River, go get a pillow from your room. And River would have to say, yes, sir. And then run out of the room and get a pillow and come back with it as fast as he could. And then I'd give him a piece of candy. And then I'd say, go put your pillow back on your bed. And he'd say, yes, sir. And he'd run and go put it back on his bed and then come run back and I'd give him another piece of candy. And I would say, go give your mom a hug. Yes, sir. And he'd run over and give his mom a hug and come back and get a piece of candy. And I do this with all the kids. And what I was teaching them was obey right away. Say yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Do it cheerfully. And we are just running drills. I mean, obedience is something that I wanted them to learn. And just like any other drill, layup drill, you know, shooting drill, whatever, you get what you practice. Practice makes perfect. And a lot of families, a lot of parents are always in a game and they never have practice. If all the commands you ever give are the game is on the line, then how are you preparing them for the game? How are you preparing them for the game? You didn't practice that. Now, of course, obedience is transferable, and so they ought to learn to obey, and then there's a new situation, and you give an instruction, and they should be able, you know, as they get older, they can transfer that skill. But nevertheless, are all the commands you ever give always in the game? Well, then I would say then you're at least in danger of provoking your children to wrath. Practice. And by, when my when my son was for a short while, this is one of our fun stories from when one of my sons was little. He had this terrible temptation that when my wife went into the grocery store, that when they got into the freezer section, he just really wanted to lick the freezer doors because they were so cold. I don't know. Good looking. We still don't know. Actually, I brought it up recently and my son said it was really good. And, So I told my wife after the next couple, you know, it happened a couple of times and I realized like, okay, this is like sort of a discipline thing. And, my wife's like, he can't be doing that. And so I said, all right. So before you go into the grocery store, you're going to have the conversation with him. Talk about it before you go into the grocery store. Now we're going to go into the grocery store and we're going to go through the freezer aisle and there are going to be beautiful looking cold freezer doors and you can't lick them. You just can't. And, you know, and that really helped. I mean, it was like this preparation. He's like, okay, I'm ready. I'm good. I can do this. And then, you know, I think he would, mom, maybe even the first couple of times, you know, as they were getting close, right? Son, this is the aisle. And okay, I'm ready. And, you know, and eventually that temptation passed. But, the principle being though is, you know, prep your kids for the game, prep them for church. I mean, I think one of the things that, a lot of parents, Christian parents, wrestle with is young kids in church. And you ask, so how often do you practice for church? And lots of parents are like, wait, what? Practice? You're taking your kid to something that you don't do the rest of the week. And then you just assume that they're going to know how to obey there? Like, they just got here on planet Earth. You know, like, they haven't been around that long. And yeah, you have to practice with them. So, you know, a family worship is a great opportunity to do this. When the kids were little, you know, we would require them to sit in a seat, in an actual chair. And I would usually do it for like, you know, just like 5 minutes or maybe 10 minutes. And sometimes we'd set a timer even just so they could see how long we were going. And then, you know, there we would say, all right, let's all stand together and sing the doxology. You know, and it wouldn't be all, you know, formal or anything, but they'd stand and then let's sit down and maybe I'd read a little, you know, a chapter from the Bible. And then, you know, but they had to practice sitting still so that, that was a command that they had learned. And that, you know, then when we got to church, it was like time to sit still and, oh, this is that thing that we were practicing for. But don't require obedience of them that you've not taught them, you've not prepared them for. Think of the same thing when you're going over to families' houses. I really feel terrible when parents, you know, I'm the pastor and I'm standing at the back of the church and, you know, families are coming out and some, you know, mom or dad says, you know, say thank you to the pastor. And the kid just stands there and, you know, gives you the, you know, the dead eyes, the fish eyes or whatever. And then they're like, say thank you to the pastor. And it's like quickly becoming a discipline thing. And I'm like the kid doesn't even know me. I'm like, you know, I'm the guy that's up front. And, you know, now, what I tell parents when they ask, I say, you know, now if you've been practicing that all week long and then you say, okay, this is the morning, he's going to be there. Remember Pastor Sumter, he's going to be there. Go up to him and you're going to say, thank you. Now, yeah, totally. I'm down for that, but don't spring it on him. Don't spring like, hey, say thank you to that random person, you know? Or, you know, shake his hand. Have you been practicing shaking hands? So when my kids were little and we would have people over, we would prepare sometimes for the guests. And I would actually literally, like, I would go outside the door and I'd say, all right, ready? We're going to practice. They're coming over. Okay. And then I'd ring the doorbell or I'd, you know, knock on the door. And then my kids, you know, they think it's hilarious because it's dad and they come over and they open the door and they say, hi, I'm, you know, Mr. Smith. And they had to practice, you know, oh, hi, Mr. Smith, welcome here. And, you know, my son would shake the hand and, you know, can I take your coat or whatever? I mean, the things you want them to do, practice for the game. Show them how. And of course, a lot of that is you know, joy, obedience. Anyways, practice for the game. Obedience all the time, cheerfully. Three, talk about the reality of sexual temptation and self-control from early years in language they can understand. talk about it from early years in language they can understand. When my sons were little, really little, I told them about the bad lady. That's how we described it. There's a bad lady. And that bad lady is the harlot from Proverbs, what Reuben was talking about earlier. And I said, yeah, you've got to watch out for the bad lady. There are real bad ladies in this world. And I taught them that God made women beautiful, but some women use their beauty to sin and cause men to sin. And they were taught from when they were, you know, 2 or 3 years old that this is one of the great battles of manhood, that they were going to have to fight this battle, and they needed to watch out for the bad lady. They were taught to look away. Don't look at that bad lady. That's the bad lady. And I would sometimes point it out to them. There, son, see, that's one of the bad ladies. And you know, I'm dating myself a little bit. We used to have these things called video stores where you'd go and rent videos. And when my older son was little, I remember walking through a video store one time, and all of a sudden he came running and had this terrified look on his face and said, "Dad, I saw the bad lady." And I said, "Yeah, there's a few in here." And, you know, but he knew that. But he knew that one of the things that I wanted to teach them, though, is that this is dangerous. But also part of the reason it's dangerous is because it is beautiful. And I wanted to be clear with that. They were taught to look away and run away, but not because it isn't beautiful, but because it is beautiful and it can destroy a man. And I wanted them to have that fixed in their mind early on. So we did not say that was gross or disgusting. And I didn't let my wife say that either. It's not gross or disgusting. What they're doing, there is a certain, you know, element that is gross or disgusting by displaying themselves like that. But I didn't want them to get the idea that I was saying that these female bodies were gross or disgusting. I didn't think it would be helpful to lie to them like that. God made a woman's body to be beautiful, but that beauty is only to be enjoyed in the context of the covenant of marriage. So I wanted both of those principles to be fixed in their minds from an early age. So this was going to be one of the great battles they were going to fight. There is someone called the bad lady, and she is beautiful. And that's why it's so dangerous, and they need to be careful. At some point in late elementary, early junior high, I've told my sons that the center of their self-control is going to include their male member. Your penis is going to be part of this great battle. And they usually look at me like I'm a weirdo. But my goal is to tell them that before they feel it in their body. I've prepared them with the categories, and then sort of right before puberty is when I sort of zero in a little bit. I don't tell them much more than that, but I just say, this is where you need to be careful. You're going to have to rule this part of your body carefully. Four, practice male-female distinctions from young ages. Practice male-female distinctions from young ages. No wrestling girls, no fighting girls, no teasing girls just like the boys. Protect your mom and your sisters. Honor them. Hold the doors for them. Help them. Carry things. These are certainly household rules, and they applied from the moment they could hold a sword or a gun. So from the moment they could hold a sword or a gun, the Nerf gun or whatever, or a stick in their hands, I was telling them about how they had to use that strength to protect their mom and their sisters. They were disciplined right away for using it on their sister or using it in a reckless way. But the primary thing was teaching them from jump that they had to pay attention, that there was this massive distinction between boys and girls, between men and women, between male and female, that they were going to be required to honor in my house. These were household rules, of course, but they were required to take them with them into the world. So when my son was involved in the local wrestling club for a few years in elementary school, the coach knew, we told the coach, that my son was not to be paired with a girl, there were a couple of girls in the wrestling club. And then at the tournaments, my son was prepared to forfeit whenever he came up against a girl in his division. And unfortunately for my son, there was this one large girl in his division for several years. And that was a trial. That was something that he understood and accepted, was joyful and cheerful about, and that was just his deal. Later on, as the boys have gotten older, they both do lacrosse and football. I'm really grateful that this distinction between men and women, boys and girls, is heavily encouraged and enforced at my kids' school, Logos School here. Every class, the girls get to sit down first. The guys have to wait for the girls to be seated. When they're leaving class, all the girls get to leave first. All the boys stand and wait for all the girls to leave. All the boys know that they have to hold the doors for any gals coming, their classmates or teachers. So these distinctions are enforced there, but we've wanted that to be honored in the sports. And so, in lacrosse and football, I and my son's coaches have made very careful distinctions whenever we've been aware of a girl on an opposing team. We do not check the girls. We do not tackle the girls. One element of pornography is actually that I think is frequently missed is the sin of men wanting to get a woman to act like a man. That's part of one of the central sins in pornography. It's men wanting to get a woman to give herself away with a female body that lines up with male lusts. A real woman doesn't want to be loved like that. That's not love. A real woman doesn't want to be treated that way. It's not feminine at all. So what porn is trying to get women to act like men sexually. And lust basically is wanting a woman to act like a man sexually, being aggressive, lustful, promiscuous. So it's no surprise to me that in this pornographic culture, it's actually led to rampant homosexuality and now transgenderism. There's something deeply homosexual about pornography. It's a man most likely behind a camera telling a woman to do things that men want. But I think we've often left a flank unprotected here in our battle against pornography and homosexuality and transgenderism. We've left a flank unprotected by refusing to make these distinctions between boys and girls when they're young. And also in sports in particular. Five, talk about marriage and children regularly. Talk about marriage as a good thing, a noble thing, a manly thing. Require your boys to cheerfully acknowledge that it is a good thing. If they're normal sons, normal boys, they'll say things like, that sounds gross, that sounds disgusting, and that's fine. But you need to require them to also acknowledge cheerfully that, yeah, it's a really good thing, and one day I'll do that. We have this conversation sometimes in the house. You know, my 10-year-old is still on the other side of the fence with the whole thing. But he knows, and he is required to cheerfully acknowledge, but it's going to be awesome one day. And that's as far as he has to say right now. And can still think it sounds gross. On the flip side, do not allow your sons or your daughters to pretend to be ready for marriage before they actually are. No grade school crushes, no passing notes about who likes who, no middle school pairing off, no high school romances. If they aren't ready to get married and have kids, they aren't ready to go shopping. And far too many Christian families and communities allow lust to be stoked in little boys and then wonder why they have such a hard time saying no to sexual sin. And many mothers, many Christian mothers, are the direct cause of this stumbling because they think it's cute. And many husbands refuse to step in and stop it. No, we're not going to do this in our family. No, we're not going to play at marriage. We're not going to pretend marriage. This is too high of a glory. The stakes are too high to play with this. I was sitting in our living room a few weeks ago, and I overheard a Duck Dynasty episode, which my kids often watch with my blessing. But there was an episode not too long ago where a high school girl was being dated by a high school boy. And the whole episode was about how the dad was pretty nervous about it all. And the wife and the daughter and the whole extended family thought he was just being dumb. And in the end, he caved to the pressure and decided the young high school boy, you know, 15-year-old boy, 16-year-old boy, whatever, was actually a pretty upstanding citizen and he should probably lighten up. And I talked to my kids afterwards, overhearing bits and pieces of it. And, you know, that was a pretty dumb episode. What a, you know, what a limp noodle of a father, huh? And he was right. The point is not that every young couple has to fall into sexual sin, but the point is, what are you inviting? What are you practicing for? What kind of drills are you running? And again, far too often, people are running the wrong kind of drill. The Song of Songs says not to awaken love until it's ready. Song of Solomon 2, verse 7, 3, verse 5, 8, verse 4. It says it three times, like it might actually be important. Don't awaken love until it's ready. Don't play that game. While this is true for daughters and sons, I don't think many women, or frequently women, don't understand the way that God has wired men, and they need you to teach them that. This is not gonna work. You think it's cute. You think it's romantic. It's not. You're setting your son up for failure. You could also think of this as basic firearm safety for sex. Don't point your gun at anything you're not willing to shoot. Six, speaking of Duck Dynasty, guard your family entertainment choices carefully. Movies, books, and music. Think of your entertainment as your friends and mentors. You want to grow up and be like him? You want to grow up and be like her? Think of your entertainment as your friends and mentors. And don't be naively simplistic. Don't just say, well, it's rated G, it must be fine. I think some of the most dangerous movies are from Disney, and some of the most dangerous books are found in Christian bookstores. And what I mean is that the greatest threats, probably in a group like this, where everybody knows about the dangers of the internet and pornography and sex scenes, in a room like this, none of you are, you know, you're all on guard for that. And so I think the first great threats for many of our kids are lies about boys and girls, men and women, marriage, love, and children. A lot of so-called Christian novels are what I call emotion porn for women and girls. So it's in the Christian bookstore and there's no nudie scenes and the book is full of lies. And the book is full of lies about what a real man is. And it's the opposite of what I was talking about with porn earlier. You know, visual porn is frequently men trying to get women to act like men sexually. But emotion porn for women is written, a bunch of men are written up acting all effeminate and feminized. They're men who are very in touch with their feelings constantly. And maybe they happen to, you know, wear, you know, have be a gun, you know, be a gunslinger or something kind of superficially manly, but they don't actually act like men. They don't think like men. And so lies get into our daughters' heads about what a real man is like. And the same thing can happen with Disney movies. Most of the old Disney movies consistently proclaimed what I call the Disney gospel, which basically consists of the good news that if you disobey your dad, he will apologize to you in the end, and everyone will live happily ever after, right? That's the Disney gospel. If you disobey your dad, he will apologize to you in the end, and everyone will live happily ever after, which is absolutely absolute garbage. And your sons are being catechized by those kind of movies just as much as your daughters. What is a real dad? What is a real man? What is a real father? And so watch what your sons are being catechized by. Also, beware of your music choices, especially as your children grow older. Spotify can be just as pornographic as Instagram. Spotify can be just as pornographic as Instagram. At the same time, cultivate a culture in your home of pursuing the good, loving the good. The primary focus should not be all the movies and books, quote, we're not allowed to watch or read. You don't want that to be the tone in your home, all the things you're not allowed to do. Rather, the primary focus should be on the movies, the books, the music, the hobbies that you love and that your kids love with you. Pick some good favorites and then make it your favorite. Dive in. Do it all the time. Make it the kind of thing where everyone comes home on a Sunday afternoon and everyone, all the ideas that are coming out are great ideas and you're trying to pick the best of, which one shall we pick? Everybody knows this is a list of great ideas. These books, these movies, this music, whatever. Number 7, all the best teaching in the world isn't worth anything if you're not living it out yourself. All the best teaching in the world isn't worth anything if you're not living it out yourself. This means modeling faithfulness and joy, particularly to the wife of your youth. While you should certainly not be inappropriately open about your sexual relationship, your kids should know that you are sexually attracted to your wife. You should kiss her, hold her, hug her, hold her hand, give her gifts, compliment her, tell her she's beautiful and attractive regularly and in front of the kids. They will groan and laugh and make awkward comments, and that means you're doing it right. Okay? Make sure you hug and kiss your daughters a lot. Tell your daughters that they are beautiful. Help them make choices, wise choices about what they're wearing, about their presentation, how they interact with their brothers and other boys. Require respect of your sons by your daughters. You want to require that. Don't allow them to be flirty or teasing. Obviously there can be, a little more familiarity with their brothers, but nevertheless, guard them from that with other boys, especially. When you love your daughters and you teach them appropriately, not in a way that's, singling them out or making them embarrassed or something, but as you encourage them in these areas, and the family is around, you're teaching your sons about being men. So I'm talking about you loving your wife and your daughters well, and you are modeling for your sons what a man is as you encourage them in how they are and how they interact with boys and men. You're teaching them about what it means to be a husband and a father. I think easily the most powerful thing that my dad gave me was his love for my mom. That's easily the most powerful thing that my dad gave me. His faithfulness to my mom, his friendship with my mom, his just joy with my mom. That's easily, I think, one of the most potent things that my dad gave me, was just watching that. And that's not him giving me a lecture or a Bible study. It was just him being really into my mom. And I never had any doubt at all my life, that my dad's best friend is my mom. She's his favorite person in the whole world. And that's been one of the greatest gifts that my dad's given me. Last thing, and I know I've gone way over time, but 8, related to modeling sexual faithfulness, you must be sexually pure. Whenever you stumble, you must make it right away. Otherwise, you're a hypocrite and you have a log in your own eye. You won't be able to see clearly to help your sons grow into men. My rule of thumb is that you need not give your wife the play-by-play of every thought that went through your head today. But if you actively seek out or succumb to sexually explicit material, your wife needs to know. And you need to ask her forgiveness for that unfaithfulness to her. And, maybe if that sort of thing only happens once in a blue moon, that may be enough to give you the strength and courage to be fighting those temptations and keeping them at bay. But if it's not, if it's any kind of habit at all, if it's anything with any kind of regularity, you've got to have the strength and courage to make changes to your life. Repent. Jesus says that if your hand causes you to sin, you need to cut it off. If your eye causes you to sin, you need to pluck it out. And he was talking about lust. So If it's any kind of habit, any kind of regularity in your life at all, you must make changes to your viewing habits. I don't care if it's weird that you have to cancel cable. I don't care if it's weird you have to cancel the internet. Change how you spend your free time, your downtime. Get a new phone, get a dumb phone, a flip phone. Delete all the apps, or at least the ones that are causing your problems. Think of your faithfulness and your courage in this area as directly related to the faithfulness and courage that you want your sons to have. Don't be a fool who thinks that you can be a faithless man, a cowardly man, and somehow have courageous sons that turn out. No, a man reaps what he sows. So, on the one hand, your faithful fight will help you better understand the fight your sons are facing. As you fight faithfully, teach your sons the lessons you're learning. Teach it to them in language that they can understand. But also, above it all, when we talk about raising sons, you simply want the blessing of God on your family. You simply want the blessing of God on your sons. And that's what repentance is. When you repent and you turn to the Lord, you're fundamentally saying, Lord, I need your blessing. I need your grace on my life and my family and my boys. And that's the bottom line in all of this. You want God's blessing. And the only way to have God's blessing is to surrender and to lay it all down.
I hope these words from Pastor Toby were helpful to you. You'll share them with a friend who would benefit from his wisdom. And we'll see you this Friday morning for another regular episode of the Life on Target podcast. Have a good one.